Welcome to the Leadership Journey Podcast. My name is Alan Wilson, and I'm the host of the podcast. Each week, I'll be talking to various Christian leaders, discussing some of the things that have contributed to the story of their leadership, and at the same time, encouraging you to reflect on your own leadership journey. You can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes. Just look for the Leadership Journey Podcast, and while you're there, you can leave us a review. Meantime, enjoy the podcast. Over the past couple of weeks, I've been talking to Phil Emerson. Phil's one of the leaders of Emmanuel Church in Lurgan. If you've missed the first two parts of Phil's story, you might want to look for them on iTunes. In those first two episodes, Phil talked about some of his early steps in Christian ministry and some of the life and leadership shaping things that he's experienced along the way. In this week's episode, Phil shares very personally about the painful sudden loss of his first wife and about a season of loss that the church family experienced. Further on in our conversation, he talks about some of the opportunities that he and the church have had for wider influence, and he shares his three top pieces of advice for younger leaders. Phil, welcome back another time to the Leadership Journey Podcast. Appreciate you giving us all this time to talk through your journey. Fascinating, real sense of the hand of God, and some incredibly, I suppose, incredible lows and incredible highs as well. You talked last time about the business catastrophe and how much you lost and the house fire, and yet somehow in the middle of all of that, God was preparing your heart for the work that you were going to be doing in the Lurgan Creek Avonport of Down.
Yeah.
And then your encounter with God, you talked about that as well. And it's one thing other leaders have talked to me about, you know, sometimes in a dramatic experience of God almost going out of his way to reassure them of his love.
Yeah.
You know, others have talked about that. Others have talked about that as well. So all very powerful. Let's talk about maybe some more recent times. Now, I know that you said last time that you'd gone out with two women and you'd married them both.
Mm.
Now, that's a funny way to put it, but there's obviously
yeah.
a desperate sadness in the midst of that.
Yeah.
Can you talk to us a little bit about Jill? She obviously, from what you'd said last time, was a real ministry partner.
Oh, aye. She was a massive influencer. You know, met her when I was 15. And We were married 27 years, and she was an incredible person. She died in 06, and it was like we were 10 years old. So it felt, I always say, when I tell the story of Emmanuel, I always say it felt like the first 10 years we couldn't do anything wrong, and then it felt like the next 5 or 6 we couldn't do much right.
Mm.
And so she died on the 23rd of March. 2006. We just come home from India, and we support a mission out there, have done for nearly 20 years now, Pastor Jacob, and we were home about 3 weeks, and she was our women's pastor. She loved, we called her the Pink Lady, you know, so she loved women's ministry. She loved the lost and the broken. She had one of the biggest hospitable gifts. So while I love pastoring, I'm a bit of a solitary individual as well, so I like my own space. So I used to say my idea of a nice night, Saturday night, was close the curtains, hide the car around the back and pretend you're not there, you know. Her idea of a good Saturday night was open the curtains, you know, invite everybody, all friends, more people the better. For Jill, she thrived around people. And so she was leading she just set out to plan a big conference. It was going to be in Armagh City Hotel. 1,200 delegates turned up to the conference. It was held after she died, but she was in the organising. It was called Intimate Issues, and it was a group of ladies that she'd come on in America and followed up, and long story short anyway, but she'd been up at one of our elders' houses. They had a meeting around this thing and this up-and-coming conference, and she'd just come home from that late on, and we were chatting about, they'd been praying together, and, you know, and I, we were just getting ready for bed, and I was in bed, and I remember saying to her, right, get in and tell me about this prayer meeting. And she got into bed beside me. We held hands as was our norm, and we prayed. And in the middle of praying, she put her head on my shoulder, my left shoulder, which I thought was just a faction, and then I heard her sigh, and she gives three big sighs, and she died. And that's the weirdest thing ever, because I don't remember an awful lot about the night. A few things stick out. One was, I remember ringing 999 saying to the guy, I think my wife's just died. And, they talked me through CPR and all of that, which I did. And the ambulance arrived within 11 minutes. It felt like 11 days, mind you. But they said 11 minutes they were there. And my kids were all, two married, two still at home, but none of them were in the house at that time. And so I had to ring my kids and say, look, Mum's not well, can you get back to the house ASAP? Of course, they came back, and by that stage, ambulance was there, and people were there, and police were there, and of course, nobody would let them up the stairs to see what was going on. They were, the medics were working with her, they tried to resuscitate. And then, that moment when they say, we need to ring for a doctor, because medics can't obviously pronounce the person dead. So I was holding her feet, and they'd done the
heart massage,
the defibrillator, they'd done that three times on her. And I was holding her feet, I was just holding her feet, praying my biggest prayers and crying out to God with everything at the top of my voice that God could not let this happen. He could not. I remember saying, God, you cannot allow this to happen. It's just not right, and it's not fair, and you can't allow it to happen. But I remember our feet were getting colder by the second. This went on for about 40 minutes. And her feet were like two blocks of ice. And you just knew, And there was a little foreign, beautiful little girl, Polish doctor. And I remember just saying to me, I'm really sorry, Mr. Emerson, but your wife's dead. And I remember going down the stairs, my four kids and their partners were all in the living room. And as soon as I opened the door, they said, is Mum all right? That was their first question. Is Mum okay? And I just remember saying, Mum's dead. There's the only way I could do it. I didn't know what else to do. And I'll carry that moment to my grave, your four kids, just the disbelief and the cries and the sobs of that room that night. Then we did an interesting thing. Of course, they wanted to go up to see her, and she was still laying on the floor, taking her onto the floor at the side of the bed. And the doctor and they said, look, we'll give you some time as a family. And we knelt around her lifeless body on the bedroom floor, and we held hands and we prayed. And I remember saying, look, I don't know what God's up to, and I don't know why he would ever let this happen. But we've got to trust him. We've got to trust him. Because if we don't, we've nothing else. And this is one of those times in life where when you don't understand him, you've still got to trust him. And some of my kids, two of my kids were good with that. Two of them weren't. But we all went on our own journeys of that, and my kids are great, of the best kids in the world. Some of them had to go on a long journey to come back to the realization that God is good. While others of them accepted that there and then, but it was everybody had to go on a journey, and it was kind of weird as a family, because, when you lose somebody like that, what we didn't know, what nobody had ever told us, was that. A couple of things I would say, just for people. Nobody told me grief and fear were cousins. mm-hmm. You know, it was the fear. I couldn't cope with the fear. It was the waking up in the middle of the night and knowing I was never going to see her again in this side of eternity. The fear. I didn't know that was actually related to grief. So it was, well, that was a journey. And then, you know, trying to do life again with your kids because you lose the part of the person in your kid. So you have to learn how to do family dynamics again. So so was that. That was a massive hit for us.
What about your own sort of you know, this relationship between not understanding but trusting? Was that something that was a constant for you, or was it something that you had to battle at times?
I don't think I ever had to battle at all, and that's the truth. I think you know, when the, when there's water in the well, you know, you can, I just think when it's in there, that's back to the old upbringing, isn't it? There was stuff invested and put in that, you know, I didn't realise at the time, but the fact that it was there, you know, was, you know, like we've lived through the days of the hyper charismatic movement where there was no actual substance to it, and, you know, there was no, and then when the first wind of adversity came, it just blew away, you know, but there's something about the word and the spirit, isn't there? There's something about when those two things meet and come together in a person's life, when we have the strength and value of the word of God, and we have the beautiful wind and holiness and ruach of the Holy Spirit. You know, and when that's operating in someone's life. So I never, I don't think I ever, you know, I've penned little bits and pieces. I penned a little piece called Tears in Your Ears. You know, I remember lying in the park, you know, at nights. It's weird, actually, when you look back, lying in Lurgan Park in the middle of the night. It was the only place I could find ease. And when you lay on your back and wept, the tears ran down into your ears.
Oh, my
So I wrote a little article.
Is that available? Is it online?
My kids always say I should release some of this stuff, you know. But we're always little things, you know, that, you know. So it was just like, it was just a journey, you know, of loss and of grief. And then, you know, our church journey was very difficult well, you know, because 5 months after Jill died, Lindsay, Alan's wife, who was only 23, she took the brain tumour. And then 7 months after that, she died. She was only 23, so we buried our two wives, you know. And then Garth, who was one of our worship guys, the year after, the February after that, died of a brain tumour, 28. Robert and Joy Proctor's son, Garth, and so we lost three pretty prominent.
Yeah,
and then I lost my mum and my dad. So it was about 5 years of mum and dad were both aged, you know. Yeah. But it was about 5 years. It just felt like grief after loss, and
But can I ask you a couple of things about that? One is one's a pastoral question, and the other's more of a theological question.
Yeah,
I'll start with the theological question. As a charismatic church, believing in healing and so on, how did you come to terms with that? Did you have to adjust your theology somewhat? Did it influence how you shaped your theology? The fact that you had these people who died within, you know, leaders within the church, would it have shaken your belief that God's a healer?
No, I think you know, a lot of it, you know, when you read, you know, the second book of Corinthians, and you read how Paul proves his apostolic call by two things. He proves it by perseverance in hardships, you know, and perseverance in healing, so I felt like back then it was, for us, it was a bit like, I think, you know, I'm still, this is my simple theology. I'm not a theologian, all right? I'm not a theologian, but my simple theology is we pray and God does the biz, you know? We are his servants, not his master. And so My little line is, I always want our church to be a place where everybody's story fits. Mm-hmm. So if you say everybody gets healed today, I always say my story doesn't fit there. Mm-hmm. But if you say nobody gets healed today, mm-hmm. I know some people in our church mm-hmm. who know we have a guy who got totally healed of prostate cancer. And like, is, you know, this is, I mean to the point where a doctor holds up two sheets and says to him, this is not the same person. And this was his little line. He said, somebody got here before me. You know, this was just recently. So if you say, well, everybody gets healed, my story doesn't fit. If you say nobody gets healed, his story doesn't fit. Mm-hmm. So there's a tension between the now and the not yet. And we're mm-hmm. We're in that tension, aren't we? We're part of a kingdom that we see little expressions that come now that break out. And we see my friend who just got healed of prostate cancer, of another girl who got totally healed of breast cancer. Same thing. You know, I'm not saying this is somebody who got healed of a sore head. This is somebody right. who a medic holds right. up a report and says this is mm-hmm. divine intervention, you know. Mm-hmm. I love that mm-hmm. their story actually fits there, you know. So I just say my job is if somebody comes in with a terminal illness to us, I'll say, look, I'll go on this journey with you wherever it'll lead. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. I'm going to pray and believe God for God to heal you. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't, I'll journey with you to the end. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't think that's a cop out. I think there's a mystery in healing.
Yeah.
There's a mystery to godliness.
Yeah.
You know, great is the mystery of godliness. And so there's a mystery to healing. And I think anybody that claims to know and have the full ethos of it, I think, again, back to the now and not yet, there's that tension.
Yeah, there is.
You know, there's we're you know, it's back to I was saved, I am saved, yeah. and I'm going to be yeah. saved is the doctrine yeah. of salvation, yeah, isn't
that's
it?
Right. That's
and
right.
it's a bit, you know, so
yeah. What about pastorally then? How did you? It must have been really hard to be pastoring that when you needed pastored yourself.
Yeah.
And yet other people, presumably in the church family, they're grieving as well, not in the same way as you are. But were you able to help other people, or who really shepherded the church through that?
I think, you know, our elders were great. Our elders were really, really great at that time, you know, and they allowed me, you know, I was said, you know, after Jill died, I turned up I was in my office the following week. You know, they allowed me to come in and out. Mm. I found my attention span. They tell me I don't have the best attention span anyway. But I found, you know, I couldn't cope with long meetings. They protected me from appointments mm. or church, you know, did seem to appreciate the distance. One thing that was so beautiful in the middle of it all, one of our worship leaders was a bit of a minstrel to me.
Hmm.
So he would just come to my house with his guitar and literally I would lie on the settee in the room and he would just play and worship
Amazing.
For hours.
Yeah.
And there was so much healing in that. Uh-huh. It was beautiful.
Uh-huh.
You know. And that and the love and care of people and, you know, there is nothing like, again, as an old Hybels one, the local church is the hope of the world, and there's nothing like it when it's functioning right. Mm. And I saw it function in its beauty, and I'm a product of mm-hmm. of a good local church.
Mm-hmm.
And that just functioned mm-hmm. and helped. And so that's our mandate, you know, to help people in distress and seek justice for people. And
yeah.
so...
Yeah.
So it was beautiful, I have to say,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then God allowed me to meet Lorraine, and there was a beauty in that, and there was a journey in that, mm-hmm. falling in love again, and you know, and it actually brought another extra level of grief, you know, as
what
well.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it was a bit like Andrea Wigglesworth explained it to me. She said, "Phil, it's a bit like, you know, when someone dies, it's a bit like, you know, the train stops and you get off.
Uh-huh.
And then the train starts to move again and you can only run along the platform so long.
Uh-huh.
You know, sooner or later you have to get back on the train."
Yeah.
And that was really hard.
Uh-huh.
because part of me wanted to stay on the platform.
Uh-huh.
You know, part of me didn't want to let that go. And while, you know, 12 years on now, and you know, you learn, you learn how to walk with a limp.
Yeah.
You know, you learn how to carry it, and it's part of you, and it goes deep. And so, but you know, Lorraine has been such a blessing, such a powerful, you know, it's different, completely different. I think you have to go through all the things where you, I'm sure there's loads of other people have been through, I know, not I'm sure, but there's loads of other people have been through this, where you have to, you know, you learn that they're completely different people. And
yeah, and yet she's also a ministry partner. I mean, we were chatting earlier on, and you were saying about her being at a conference with camp. And
that's right.
Yeah.
Loves Jesus, loves the church. A brilliant partner, you know, my lover and my friend. And so, yeah, that's, God has blessed me. And, so yeah, and it's back to trusting him when you don't understand him, isn't it?
Yeah. That's a blessing. Come back to the church and to your ministry and so on. Obviously, Emmanuel has grown, and we've talked, I think, off the recording, we've talked about you know, various plants around the area that you've been involved in. But I know also that you personally, and also Emmanuel, have a heart that goes way beyond just Craigavon, Lurgan, Portadown. You're personally invested in quite a number of younger leaders.
Yeah.
And then there's a network that you've established in the past 2 years. Tell us about some of that ministry.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think it's one of those levels that I tend to think, this is my own little theology, and maybe theology is not even the right word. Maybe it's my own little meanderings. But I think there's a level of church life that only... There's much of church life we can do. This is awful, but there's much of church life you could do without God.
Agreed.
You know,
yeah.
Which is so sad.
Yeah.
But there are levels of it. There comes, which is pointless, absolutely pointless to do it without him. But so there are levels that God brings you to that only God can bring you to.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt this a few years ago, that God was pulling us to something that we were sort of, we weren't asking for, we weren't saying, right, God, we're ready for this. But it felt like God was raising something up around the resource of helping resource other churches and other, we were seeing people saved in different communities in our locality that were very lost and broken, that we were saying, I don't leave, because the old system was somebody gets saved and they thought, well, we're too good to live in there anymore.
Yeah.
So we were saying, no, go back, carry it in, do the Samaritan woman, you know. And so we began to really have a heart for the nation. Alan was very involved with 24/7 prayer, which was national as well, which was pulling us maybe, and we became a 24/7 resource church. Which, and then I did a silly thing. Oh,
this your risk taking again, isn't it?
I prayed a prayer, and you need to be careful what you pray, because you might just get it. And I took one of those. We have a prayer room, a 24-hour prayer room, and I took a middle of the night slot. I think it was 3 to 4 in the morning, and I set the alarm for 3:15. And when the alarm went off, you know, you think, why in the wide world did I do this? And I, you know, so I got up, went down, drove down, went into the prayer room. I was so tired. I was so tempted just to lie on the settee and, you know, at least I'm in the prayer room. I could have a wee sleep and be in the prayer room. But we have a map of Ireland, and it's a right big map, and it was in the middle of the floor. And being tired, 3 o'clock in the morning, I lay on top of Ireland, and I sprawled across Ireland, and I put my arms east to west, and I lay north to south, and I prayed this prayer. I said, God, could you, by the time I die, if you haven't come back, put in my heart all that you have for this nation? And something happened when I prayed that prayer. I knew, there was no flashing lights. But I knew when I prayed, if something clicked in my mind, and I thought, Phil, God might just have heard that. And this is about 3 years ago, and maybe 4 years ago. So we began to feel God was calling us to, and we would do breakfasts and lunches for church leaders, and we would use this little line on, and we would say, you know, we've no agenda here today. And you can only say that so often, you know, after 10 meetings, mm-hmm. you know, you've got to think, you're going to have an agenda. Mm-hmm. And so I spoke at the Plumline Church Leaders weekend in down in Dublin. Mm-hmm. And on my last talk, Fran Wiley, who's a beautiful saint of God from Galway, now labouring in France, her and her husband Graham, Fran came up to me and she says, Phil, I think I have a prophetic word for you. And I goes, okay. And she says, every time you get up to preach today, she says, I saw the picture of a really healthy tree. And she says, I've a notion that it's maybe what you guys are doing up there in Emmanuel. It looked really healthy. But she says, there's a really heavy branch. And she said, the branch is like trying to break off the tree. And she just put it this way. She said, I don't think it's bad, but it needs attention. And then she said to me, Fran, as only Fran could do, she says, look, if it makes sense, well and good. If it doesn't, just throw it in the bin. What a great way to give a prophetic mm-hmm. word. And I knew, as soon as she said it, I knew it stirred something in my heart. So I come up the road and I noted it down, and then I emailed it through to all our elders, and I said, look, here's a word that Fran gave me. What do you think? And we all knew it was the resource side. It was that, you know, and then we were really felt something around, like springs and wells have always been something. So when, mm-hmm. after Jill died, one of the verses that God gave me, it's on my screensaver on my phone, was one of the verses was this verse here. If I could get everything off my phone, Psalm 84, you know, when you go through the valley of weeping, it shall become a place of refreshing. Yeah. The valley of Baca, mm-hmm. become a place of refreshing mm-hmm. springs. Mm-hmm. And then we thought the Isaiah 26 passage about Isaac reopening the wells mm-hmm. of his father. And then we got a word about being a geezer. Mm-hmm. Not that we say in Ireland to be a geezer, but you know, in you know these Scandinavian countries where you go and there's these geezers that spring up into the air, and then you know, so it's a sort of a come and see thing.
Yeah.
And then you drive down the road and there's maybe some kind of a hot spring or a hot tub that looks nothing like the geezer, but what people don't realise, it's fed through an underground system. So this was a word that God had given us, that, you know, maybe Emmanuel was a bit like a geyser, there people would come and see, but
there's a spring.
There would be springs and other things would develop that looked nothing like it. So we weren't into building the brand. Mm-hmm. And we reckoned also that there was 80 to 100,000 people mm-hmm. in Greater Craigavon area. Mm-hmm. And we do 3 services on a Sunday that mm-hmm. we could push 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. Through those 3 services, right? That's still mm-hmm. only scraping the, mm-hmm. the surface. Mm-hmm. So we knew that we weren't going to touch our local city via one church. We'd have to do it through multi-church expression. We'd have to do that through the Anglicans, the Presbyterians, all the different, you know, expressions of church. We felt that God... So, and I've always loved the church. I've loved I love them, the steeples, no steeples. I've loved, mm-hmm. God gave me a love for the church as a boy mm-hmm. from that front room that my great-grandfather started in. And so anybody that calls themselves a church, mm-hmm. I feel a mandate to support mm-hmm. and bless mm-hmm. and pray for and see mm-hmm. prosper. And so that was the branch. Mm-hmm. long story short, we come up with the name. We're calling it quite posh, Tobar.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tober is the right pronunciation. So yeah, Tober. You know, Tober Moor.
That's right. It's not like a tow bar that you have in the back of your
caravan.
Some in your holidays.
People keep us going about that, but it's we call Tobar, it Tobar, and it's the Irish word for springs and wells.
Yeah,
and that's so we've set up like a what we call an apostolic team.
Mm-hmm.
That has been released from our eldership to head up anything around church planting, church resourcing, church leadership.
So you said it's not under the name Emmanuel.
No.
So, I mean, there'd be various churches that are quite independent of Emmanuel who you're still resourcing.
Very much so, and what happened? Like we didn't set out to gather churches with it. Our whole ethos was to plant churches, and so last year we planted a church in Portadown. We planted a church in Craigavon, one in North Lurgan, in the last sort of 18 months, which has been wonderful, you know, to see that grow and prosper. But what happened was some churches that are maybe a little bit tribeless, who never really had a tribe, if you know what I mean by that, that never were under a denomination, came and some of the people like one church was Grace Church in Rich Hill, who's Neil Dawson, was part of our fellowship, and he's such a beautiful guy, and has been part of what we've done. You know, like his expression was, "Phil, it's about, you know," he said to me and Al, "it's about time, you know, want to show." So they asked if they could become part of that network. So he actually sits on the lead team with us in Tobar. And there's now four other churches involved that have sort of come and asked us, would we adopt them, for want of a better word? We have a process for that, a bit of a process of embrace, for want of a better word. So it's not that we, you know, we need to be really careful, you know, while our...
Sure.
You know, we say while the skin can be different, we need to make sure the
heart,
the bones,
yeah, the structure,
and the structure, the heart is the same. You know, so.
Okay. And then we're coming towards an end here, but I know you have this sort of father role with a lot of younger guys and maybe women as well who are involved in various forms of leadership as a mentor. What would be the three top things that you'd want to say to a young leader?
Wow, big question, Al.
Well, I'm not going to buy you coffee because I gave you a coffee.
I think for me, number one is, you know, sell out. Give him everything.
Give God everything.
Give him everything. You know, hold nothing back. That would be my first one. My second one would be, don't do it alone.
Mm-hmm.
I hear all these stories of lonely leaders, and I've never been a lonely leader. I always say, you're only as lonely as you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be a lonely leader. You know, no man's an island.
Mm-hmm.
And again, back to my old saying, all of us are smarter than some of us, and all of us are definitely smarter than one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose number three would be get around godly mentors. You know, don't be too proud to ask for help, and especially for the men, soften up a bit, don't be afraid to shed a tear. I think for me, you know, this season of my life is a bit, you know, I think I'm in the, I know that God's been calling me into that Exodus 17 mode, you know, where Moses climbed the mountain, you know, like we know that there's the three phases of Moses' ministry, you know, he came out of Egypt with the people, you know, he came to Sinai, he went ahead of the people, you know, he went to seek God on their behalf, and then, you know, Exodus 17 where he, Is it 17 or 27? I think it's 17, yes. Check my theology, please. But where he climbs up onto the top of the hill, and, you know, the Moses are.
So Josh is fighting on that. Josh is fighting Amalekites. Amalekites. And the two other guys are on her.
And there's an interesting line in it, Alan. He said that he climbs up the mountain. He holds his hands up, you know, when he holds his hands up, the Israelites prevail. Yeah. You know, when they drop, the Amalekites prevail. You know the story.
Yeah.
And then it says, if you read it, it says, write. He says to Moses, write this down. Mm-hmm. Write this on a scroll, so it will be remembered.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. Now, when God says something like that, He's trying to teach us something. Mm-hmm. Write this on a scroll, it'll be remembered. And then here's a line, where do you hear this, what he says? And make sure Joshua hears it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get over that. I think, why did God say that to Moses? Make sure. And I sort of wondered, whenever I read that, did Joshua maybe think, it's all right for Moses sitting up there now. You know, I'm the one down here trying to do the fighting. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm maybe playing my words here. But for some reason, God said, make sure this is remembered. And here we are 4,000 years later chatting about it. And the thing that I say often, you know, in that day, the battle would have been accredited to Moses or to Joshua.
Yeah.
But we know different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel there is something for fathers and mothers and for our generation, Alan, to give to the next generation that's not seen.
Yeah,
but will be remembered.
That's right. Yeah.
And being a leader for 40 plus years, it's hard to go into the unseen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's hard to slip now from. So there's grief in transition that I think some fathers don't acknowledge, and you're slipping from the seen to the unseen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that line is so profound.
Mm-hmm.
Write this down so it'll be remembered.
Mm-hmm.
And I find, you know, in my pastoring of pastors now and in pastoring young leaders who invite me on their boards, I say, no, I'm not coming on your board, but I'll climb a mountain for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Send me a photo of you. Send me a photo of your wife and your kids.
Yeah.
And I'll put it on the mountain,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's what I feel. I feel that's what I have to offer. And I feel this is going to sound really weird. I started being weird and now I'm finishing being weird. but I feel like, you know, you've ever felt God pull you to a place that you don't actually even think you want to go. And that's where I feel I'm at the minute. This season of my life, I feel like God pulling me to a place that it's kind of weird because I don't even know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've served God all my life and I know what I can do and I know what I'm good at. But I'm saying, God, I don't know whether I'm not good at this or not. I'm not dead sure you've got the right person. But here, you know, you want me to go.
Well, you've been a risk taker and God has led you and God has used you and you just sort of keep trusting, right? Even if you don't understand why he's brought you here, keep trusting. And I'm sure you've got a ton of stuff that you will offer to young leaders, and it's such a valuable resource. Listen, Phil, thank you so much
for all three
of these episodes. I appreciate that, and God bless you and bless your ministry as you
bless you too, on and everybody who listens.
And everybody who listens.
God bless.
God bless. Thanks.
Well, indeed, thanks to Phil for being part of the podcast over these first 3 weeks of Season 2. And a big thank you to you for listening. Feel free to get in touch with me via the website if you've got questions or ideas for upcoming episodes of the podcast. And remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and that will keep you up to date with the most recent episodes as they go live. I'll talk to you again next week when I'll be chatting with another leader and exploring the story of their leadership journey. And in the meantime, have a good week and God bless you.